Welcome everybody. It's lovely to be here today in such a wonderful environment and surroundings for our 2016 Annual General Meeting. I'm Mark Judney. I'm the CEO of PGG Wrightson, and it's an absolute honour and a pleasure to welcome you to our 2016 Shareholder Meeting. Before we get started, I'll just cover the housekeeping matters and the formalities. Then I'll pass to our Chairman, Alan Lai, who will address us all, and then he'll pass back to me. I'll go through the business and the strategy, and then we'll get on to the resolutions. Just housekeeping matters, though. In the unlikely event of an emergency during the course of this meeting, just the two doors here on my left are the exits. You'll just need to go out. You'll see that there's a screen up there painting at the moment, but if you go out via left and go out to the back in the car park, that will be our assembly area. Toilets are in the foyer, and there are some toilets in here behind me as well. So I confirm that there is a quorum present, and so accordingly I declare today's meeting open. I'd like to introduce our board of directors, and I'll ask each director to just briefly stand and identify yourselves. We have Alan Lai, our chairman. Trevor Burt, our Deputy Chairman. Bruce Irvine, Independent Director and Chair of our Audit Committee. Then we have Independent Director John Nicol. Independent Director Ronald Sear. Agria Director Ken Singh, you. And WK Sang, Agria Director. And we've also got John Fulton. Where are you, John? John is the CFO of Agria, a parent company, and is an alternate director for WK. In terms of executive, we've also got a number of the senior executive of PGG Wrightson with us today. We've got Julian Daly, our General Manager of Strategy and Corporate Affairs, who's also our company secretary and lawyer, and Peter Scott, CFO, down the end. In the front, we've got Cedric Bailey, who runs our wool business, looking dapper in a New Zealand merino wool suit that he's just had made up in Japan. We've got John McKenzie, who's the Group General Manager of our seed and grain business. Stephen Gurin, who's Group General Manager of our retail and water business. And we've got Duncan Fletcher, who is the Regional Manager for the Lower North Island. We have our external auditors, KPMG, with us. Thank you for joining us. And thank you all shareholders for taking your time to join us today. Apologies, we've had no apologies notified to us prior to the meeting, but I'll just ask, are there any additional apologies? No. So, notice of meeting. The company secretary has confirmed that the notice of annual meeting was sent out on the 21st of September 2016 to all registered shareholders and to other persons entitled to receive that notice. I can confirm that the minutes of the company's previous annual general meeting, which was held on the 28th of October 2015, were approved as a true and correct record at the directors' meeting that was held on the 7th of December 2015. And the minutes of that meeting are posted on the shareholder information section of our company website. Proxies, I can report that 414 shareholders have appointed proxies for the purposes of this meeting, and 170 shareholders have cast postal votes in respect of approximately 421 million shares. Our annual report, the financial statements and the reports of the directors and auditors for the year ending 30 June 2016 are set out in the company's annual report. On the 26th of September this year, the annual report was forwarded to shareholders who had requested a copy, and that report is also available on the company's website, and additional hard copies of the annual report are available at the entrance to this room on the table down there. I'd like to just note that for reporting purposes, we use operating EBITDA, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortisation as a key measure of performance in the business. So that's the headline number that we talk about. And that operating EBITDA is what's called a non-GAAP financial accounting measure. In our annual report, you'll find full details of how the EBITDA translates down to the bottom line net profit after tax, and that's just shown up there for shareholders' information. So now we've covered the opening formalities, we'll move to the general business of the meeting. I'll pass over to Alan now, who will address us. Then, as I said, he will pass back to me, and I'll talk about the year in review, financially and operationally. Then I'll provide a brief update on our strategy, and at the very end I'll talk a little bit about how we see this year unfolding, and I'll give guidance on how we see operating EBITDA for this year. We'll then have questions and any discussion, and when we've finally finished there'll be some sandwiches and light snacks out the back. I don't think we're going to open the wine today. It's just a little bit early, but I'm sure it'll still be a lovely morning tea. So thank you very much, and Alan, I'll pass to you now.
Thank you, Mark. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, to come to my seven or eight years annual meeting from the very first time. And I remember probably about 4 or 5 years ago, we also have an AGM and hospice. And actually, I'm looking forward to seeing some of my old friends from hospice as well. Okay, it's my pleasure to address you today and acknowledge the excellent result over the past year and the strides that have been made by PGG Horizon on delivering our strategy. Much credit is due to the staff that have worked in the business with our customers and suppliers over the years. Despite tougher trading conditions, the company achieved its third consecutive years of earning growth, increasing operating EBITDA to 70.2 million. The board and I are very pleased with the operational performance of the company, which has led to an outstanding financial result given market conditions. The progress of PGW has made since 2013 is worthy of a significant praise. In 3 years, PGW has grown operating EBITDA by around 50%. Our balance sheet remains strong, and the investment we have made over the year will prove crucial as the company continues to deliver its one PGW strategy. This, combined with an expected recovery, agriculture market, and commodity pricing, will provide a strong platform for further growth for the PGW business in the future. In addition to an outstanding operating EBITDA, PGW achieved a 21% increase in net profit after tax on last year. Net cash flow from operating activities also increased 21% year on year. The strong financial and operating performance and balance sheet strength gave the board and the company to pay the final dividend, a final dividend of 2 cents per share. This brought a total fully imputed dividend paid for the year to a very healthy 3.75 cents per share. This is slightly reduced from 2015's dividends of 4 cents per share, and reflects the board view that we need to remain cautious given the continued challenging market conditions being faced in the agriculture market in which PGW operates. The board and I continue to see opportunity for improvements and growth across all aspects of the company. The management team has been given a challenge to grow the business, and they are delivering. At previous annual meetings, I have noted that Mark has the most engaged team of the people in the market, and their commitments and the passion for agriculture and PGW is taking the company to a new level. Those observations remain true, and PGW is continuing to see the benefit of having such a highly engaged team in the result that the company is producing. The board believes that PGW will further capitalize on his unique position in the agriculture sector in New Zealand and continue to grow the other markets in which it operates internationally. Management has the full support of the board and has made very pleasing progress on delivering the strategy. The board is confident that the strategy, which has been refreshed over the past 6 months, is focused on the right area and achieve the right balance between the operational execution, continuous improvement, and growth. We have every confidence that business is on the right path for the future. Finally, on behalf of the board, I would acknowledge the effort and commitment of our staff across the PGW business in delivering these excellent results. I now hand you back to our Chief Executive, Mark Dewney. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks,
Alan. Thank you, Alan. And look, on behalf of the management and shareholders, I would also like to just thank you and thank Agria for your continued support as our major cornerstone shareholder. So let me just reiterate some of the points that Alan has made. Achieving a group operating EBITDA of 70.2 million was extremely satisfying for us for a number of reasons. Not only is this the first time that the business has exceeded $70 million of profit since 2010, but it was achieved in a trading environment that was tougher than we've experienced in recent years. The increased operating EBITDA across the group contributed to a higher net profit after tax of 39.6 million, and as Alan said, that's a 21% increase on the 2015 year. We're very proud of these results. From a shareholder's perspective, it should be heartening to note that they have been achieved when overall farm gate revenues in New Zealand have been down, and as a engaged and passionate team of people. So I would like to join with our chairman in acknowledging the commitment and the contribution of all of our staff in achieving this outstanding result. We are also showing the continued benefit of having a diverse exposure within agriculture, both here in New Zealand and across our other markets in South America and Australia. While our South American business has experienced a challenging period, the performance of our Australian business was strong, and New Zealand's horticulture industry has been particularly strong in the last 12 months. Financial performance is obviously a key measure of success. However, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about some of the many operational highlights that we achieved over the year. Fruit-fed supplies, our horticultural supply business, followed up their record 2015 result with another record year. Revenue for Fruitfed was up by $12.9 million. Our Australian operations performed strongly, with operating EBITDA up $2.7 million. We commissioned a purpose-built logistics and warehousing facility for our seed and grain business in Montevideo in Uruguay. The first stage was opened back in May, with the remaining stage, which includes research and development facilities, scheduled to open next month. 7.5 million head of livestock were transacted through our livestock business. We continued our retail store upgrade and replacement program with the opening of a new purpose-built retail store in Blenheim and a new site for our water business in Rangiora. In addition, we upgraded a number of our retail stores to better service the needs of our customers. We also redeveloped our Gisborne maize seed processing facility, which provides us with significantly greater processing capacity for the years ahead. These achievements are just some of the reasons why we believe that PGW is a stronger company today than it was a year ago. We have continued to invest in our people, our infrastructure, and our products. And this has built a strong foundation that is focused on delivering quality products, services, and advice to our customers in order to build the deep and trusted relationships that we have with them. We've put a huge amount of effort into the culture of our organisation. Our staff engagement performance index continues to be very strong. Our store refurbishment program and frontline training programs have also helped to contribute to market share gains. Our investment in research and development continues to improve the performance of our product range and intellectual property, generating productivity gains for our customers. And it is great to be able to stand before you today and say that this hard work is continuing to translate into increased financial returns for our shareholders. As I mentioned before, perhaps the most pleasing aspect of the 2016 financial result is that we achieved these gains in trading conditions that were tougher than we faced last year. As you'll see shortly, the key drivers of this year's result are the strong trading performances of our larger business units, retail, livestock, New Zealand seed, and Australian seed. The parts of our business that were the most exposed to dairy in difficult weather conditions had the most challenges. The more cautious spending from our dairy clients is the main reason why we've reported a small reduction in group revenue this year. You may also recall that at this time last year, there was much discussion on the developing El Nino weather pattern. And in response to concerns about the potential for dry conditions over last summer, many farmers took steps during late spring last year to mitigate the effects of the predicted summer drought by destocking. Thankfully, this drought did not materialise for most of the country, but nevertheless, this heightened drought awareness added to the general caution that gripped much of the agricultural sector during the year. These are the macro factors that we need to keep in mind as we now look at each of our major business units. I'll start with retail, which includes our rural supplies, fruit fed and agri-trade businesses. You'll see on the graph that we have continued our path of steady and significant increases in annual profitability. At the top line, revenues fell 3% as sales into the strong beef and horticultural sectors couldn't make up for the reduced dairy sector spend. However, the nature of dairy farming means that dairy spend tends to be more skewed towards high dollar value but lower margin commodity products, for example, dairy shed chemicals and stock food. As a result of this shift in our sales mix, margins increased over the year and operating EBITDA increased by 1.8 million to 29.2 million, which is a 7% increase. We've worked hard to win market share in the categories that matter most to the bottom line. I've talked in the past about the hard work we've put into developing our technical expertise, customer service skills, and logistics systems, and how this is delivering positive results. This work continues. What is really exciting is that we are now seeing the momentum that these improvements are generating. The positive culture that we have fostered has seen teams working better together than they ever have to support our customers. And as a result, we're seeing ideas grow and flourish. The positive culture has seen our workforce respond better to change and show greater capacity to meet the needs of our dynamic and consistently changing markets. As you might expect, our fruit-fed business within retail has had another great year. Horticulture is doing very well in New Zealand, and our fruit-fed team is the clear market leader for inputs into this sector. Our seed and grain business overcame an extremely tough environment, both here and in South America in 2016, and it was a great achievement to grow operating earnings by 10%. Operating EBITDA was up 4.1 million in 2016 to 44.6 million. Again, this is an outstanding result given the reduced dairy spend in New Zealand and the combination of low commodity prices and flooding in Uruguay. The main contributor to this increase in operating EBITDA was Australia, with New Zealand seeds and New Zealand seed exports also beating last year's earnings. South America finished 2016 about $1 million behind the result we achieved in 2015. You may recall at the half year point, South America was tracking $1.7 million behind. So it was good that we have been able to make up some of the lost ground over the second half of the year, particularly given the severe flooding that impacted on Uruguay and Argentina in April. Low commodity prices, both milk and soya, have also continued to provide a bit of a headwind for demand in Uruguay. The uplift in the New Zealand seeds business was predominantly in the fodder beet area. It was a difficult autumn selling season in New Zealand, with low dairy payout reducing discretionary spend, particularly with respect to undersowing and the planting of multi-season pastures. Grain prices were also down last year on the back of reduced demand for supplementary feed from the dairy sector. But on the other hand, our seed export business had a very strong finish to the year, driven by new product marketing campaigns in Chile, the USA, and South Africa. A star performer in seed and grain this year was Australia. After several tough years, it is fantastic to see that the efforts that we've put into refocusing our operations in Australia are starting to pay off. Forage seed sales to the sheep and beef market segments performed strongly on the back of very good commodity prices and favourable seasonal conditions in Australia. The fall in milk prices at the end of the last season in Australia had little impact on the main selling season for us. So now we turn back to New Zealand and to our other rural services businesses, starting with livestock. Our livestock business had another steady year in the face of tough trading conditions. A strong finish to the year meant that livestock ended up just $200,000 short of last year's result, with an operating EBITDA of $15.2 million. The domestic auction and agency part of this business had a solid year. Dairy tallies and prices were down, as were sheep prices, but this was offset by a very buoyant market for beef. We also made good progress growing our new dairy grazing business and our new range of livestock fattening products that we call Go Lamb and Go Beef. In aggregate, these parts of the livestock business grew their earnings last year. But those gains were offset by a tough year in our live export business. Reduced international demand, particularly out of China, for dairy heifers has made this market very competitive and very difficult to get deals away. And that explains why you'll see in our segmental reporting that the revenue of our livestock business dropped by $13.6 million last year. And finally, just finishing off our trading business's results, the combined operating EBITDA of all of our other rural services businesses decreased by $3.2 million from $11.8 to $8.6 million. No great surprises that this reduction in earnings was mainly in our water business, which is the PGW business that has been the most affected by the dairy downturn. Fewer dairy conversions means less demand for pivot irrigators. So as I said, 2016 was a tough year for our water team, and whilst we are seeing some signs that demand is starting to return, it's still below the levels that we have achieved in recent years. But on a brighter note, wool. Wool had a great year last year. Earnings in line with our historical achievements. As many of you will know, higher wool prices last year led to increased revenues from our own wool exports. Just in general, that wool business went really well. Credit to Cedric and his team. Our real estate business also had a great year. We sold more property in 2016 than we have in any other year since the global financial crisis hit. Whilst the dairy farm market is still slow, lifestyle, residential and horticultural markets are strong, and they really underpinned last year's strong real estate result. Just as a side note, in the future, we won't be reporting other rural services as a reporting segment. From this year, we've taken our water business and we've put that in with our retail business, where we know we will get a lot of operation synergies. and Wool Real Estate Insurance and Finance have now been merged together under a banner that we're calling our agency businesses. So in the future we'll report on Seed and Grain, Retail and Water, and the agency businesses. So let me just give you an update now on our group strategy. First though, I hope you all agree that it was really excellent to see us meet the challenges of the tougher year that we had and come out ahead of our expectations with results that, you know, on a relative basis are very, very good. So strategy. Back in 2014, we developed and put in place a new group strategic plan, and our staff and our stakeholders have responded really positively to the strategic themes and all the initiatives that we've outlined in that plan. You know, we've made good progress identifying, you know, things that we had to work on, and I think we've made pretty good progress across, you know, all of our businesses in improving what we do, growing where there are opportunities, and, you know, starting to get ready for changes that are inevitably going to impact on agriculture, impact on our customers, and impact on how we run our business. We've refreshed that strategy in the last 6 months, just gone back and said, well, what's happening in the future, you know, that's different? What do we have to do to respond? We're continuing to focus our business on the three themes of improving, and how do we improve our people? How do we improve our customer understanding and our customer relationships? How do we improve the technology we're using? How do we lower our cost base and become more efficient? How do we gain market share in all of the areas that we're working in? You know, we're continuing to focus on where are the opportunities for us to open up new customer segments? Where are the opportunities for us to, you know, take our product offering and go into new markets? Where can we bring new products in to offer to our clients? That's what we call our grow strategy. And in the game changer area, you know, this is reflecting the fact that technology is changing significantly in our society and how we carry out our business, how we communicate, and those technology changes around precision agriculture, you know, the use of big sets of data, you know, online rather than physical sale yards, all of those things are coming at us more quickly than they ever have in the past. And as a company, what we have to do is we have to recognise that large segments of our customer base will continue to want to do business with us the way that they have for many years, and we have to continue to cater to that. But there is a segment starting to emerge and grow, people wanting to do business differently, wanting to get online, wanting to get more information at their fingertips, in their paddock, in real time. And as a company, we have to, we have to make sure that we can cater to both of those. So, One PGW, that remains the central foundation of our improve theme. You know, what One PGW does is it puts the customer at the heart of everything we do in our organisation. We have many business units, we have many relationships with clients across, you know, all of the different parts of our business. And what One PGW is about is people working in one part of the business being aware of what is happening in other parts of our business and looking for opportunities for our colleagues. And that's a very powerful thing for an organisation like PGW. If we can get that right, and I'm very pleased with the progress we are making there. I talked briefly about our structure, and what we've done is we've split our New Zealand rural services businesses into two portfolios now. Our retail and water business that Stephen runs, that gives us some logistics synergies. It gives us, you know, a better ability to service our customers. And so that's underway right now. And then over the next 12 months, we'll look at how we can get our real estate, our wool, and our livestock businesses also working more closely together. It's not that they don't now, but we just think there are some more opportunities for us to, you know, put those businesses together a little bit more formally than we have in the past. If I go to grow now, over the last several years, we've invested in dairy, in our understanding of the dairy sector, and in staff and in product offerings. We've invested in water. You know, we've made a number of acquisitions to increase the range of products we can sell into the water markets, and we have invested in South America. We believe that those investments have reached a natural pause point now, where we've put our footprint on the ground, we've made our investments, and our focus in each of those areas for the next 1 to 2 years is really bedding them down and making sure that we get the benefits from the investments. So I think over the next few years, what you're going to see is more resource devoted to growing our online business models. In retail, you know, I think in livestock, there is a real, there will be a shift in the next 5 years or so where, you know, online sales of cattle will start to complement the physical sale yards, particularly in, you know, some of the more remote areas of New Zealand. You know, it's not a case of one or the other, it'll be a case of both working together and, you know, giving clients the option of choosing which way they want to work with us. But we think that now's the time for us to lift our investments in e-commerce and mobile commerce solutions. We still believe that each of our businesses has the ability to grow market share in a way that will increase earnings. We're focused on how we push into adjacent markets that align with our core strengths and values, either organically or through bolt-on acquisitions. And our third strategic theme is what we continue to call game changers. This is about precision agriculture, sensing, monitoring, data analytics, digital commerce, which are all being introduced into agriculture at an increasing rate. You know, our challenge is to ensure that we have the foresight and we have the capability to adapt our offering to kind of accommodate and keep pace with these technologies as they increasingly come into segments of agriculture. We've got a number of exciting projects on the go in this space, and we're looking forward to launching some initiatives that you'll see in the near future. Right across the organisation, being successful within the game changer theme requires us to build an internal culture that recognises opportunities and actively explores them. And I'm pleased to report that we've taken positive strides in building, you know, that culture as well over the past few years. So I'll wrap up the strategy piece there, but further details can be found in our annual report, and I would encourage you to just take a look and have a read through pages 28 and 29 of the report. So let's now come back to the 2017 year and how that is trending for us. The first quarter of any financial year is the quietest time for us, and I can report today that at the end of quarter one, we are tracking essentially right on our plans. So that's great news. I would stress that it's quarter one is only the start of the race. It's not the end of the race by any means, and our big trading seasons are still ahead of us. But it is nice to be able to say that we've started off well and we are on track. In terms of the market, the key development since we last reported, which was in August, is the improvement in dairy prices and payout forecasts. And this has been a really welcome relief for the New Zealand dairy sector, you know, who were facing up to their third season in a row of cash flow losses. It's still too early to tell what this means for dairy farmers' spending intentions this season, and there is still uncertainty about what the final level will be. Our view is that the increase in milk prices will be positive for our business in the medium term, but we believe that any real short-term increase in cash flow on dairy farms will be used to reduce debt rather than to, you know, go back and expand on their inputs. So while the price rises are positive, we're not sure it will be enough to translate into a materially higher spend from the dairy segment for us this year. In red meat, we're continuing to see weaker market prices, but those prices are still good by long-term comparators. You know, the really interesting thing at the moment is just the strength of the store cattle market and how much is being paid for store cattle at the moment. We're not sure that those current price levels will hold throughout this year, but time will tell. At the moment, we're seeing a lot lower volumes of wool being traded, and international wool prices have come off a long way, and that's largely been driven by currency realignments out of the UK as a consequence of the Brexit situation and a big reduction in demand for wool out of China. And as I said earlier, the demand for pivot irrigators from the dairy sector is still low, but I just stress it's still very early days, and there's a lot of there's a lot of water to run under the bridge yet. Excuse the pun. Confidence in horticulture and viticulture markets remains high, and that's a real area of strength for PGW. So, outlook. Let me just give you some sense of guidance now for this year. In August, when we announced last year's results, we said that repeating the 2016 operating EBITDA result of 70 million was going to be a stretch target in 2017. If we take all of our markets in aggregate, we think that the overall agricultural market for a business like PGW has become marginally tougher, and we still don't know what the real impact of the South American floods are going to be. So, we think it'll be a little bit tougher this year, but despite that, we still see a whole lot of opportunities for our business to continue to improve, to continue to grow, and to continue to do new things. And we think that we are as well positioned as we could be to capitalise on opportunities through the year as they present themselves. The strong markets of horticulture and beef are areas that we're strong, so I think we'll enjoy a good performance out of there. So at this stage, we are forecasting to the market operating EBITDA to be in a range of 62 to 68 million for the year ending June 17. And at a net profit level after tax, we expect that our performance in 2017 will be broadly in line with the performance that we reported last year. So perhaps down a little bit on operating EBITDA, but we think at a net profit after tax level we'll be around the same level as last year, which would be a great result. We'll continue to keep the market informed and shareholders informed as the season develops. So I'll wrap up there. Thank you for your patience listening to that presentation. I'd now like to take questions on the annual report, questions on the chairman's address, questions to myself on any aspect of the business. We've got a couple of roving mics that we'll get you to ask your questions into. I'll try and answer as many as I can. If there are any that are beyond my meagre abilities, then I'm going to pass them to either Peter, Julian, or other members of my exec team. So, questions, please.
Thank you. James Lockie, shareholder.
Hello, James.
In the annual report, you give us some geographical guidance for South American turnover and capital employed, but you don't give us any guidance for EBITDA from South America. Could you do so, please?
So we don't report South American profit as a segment. It's a profitable market for us. We have put significant investment on the ground there. Our target returns from any market that we go into, we look for about 20% return on capital employed. At the moment, we're travelling at probably half that. You know, we might be generating around about 10% returns. Our forward projections see us getting up to that 20% return on capital over the next 2 to 3 years. South America is a longer-term investment for us. We're confident in our people, confident in our strategy. We think we've made good investments, but it's going to take just a year or two to get the earnings levels up. So, you know, I'd prefer not to give specific profit figures for that market, but it is a profitable business, and you know, we've put the thick end of $70 million of capital on the ground there, so that gives you a kind of a sense of where we believe we can end up with South America. Okay.
Oh, okay. Good morning. My name is Paul Pratchett. I'm a shareholder and a representative for the New Zealand Shareholders Association. There's a couple of points that I've been asked to sort of bring up with you. One of which was you specifically mentioned game changers as being one of the ongoing benefits of for PGW, and there was a mention in the report of subterranean clover germplasm. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that, on exactly what it is and what the potential earnings are likely to be?
Sure. I'll ask John McKenzie, our Seed and Grain Group General Manager, to just talk about that particular question.
Subterranean clover is an annual clover. If you actually look at the New Zealand market, there's not a lot of annual clovers grown in New Zealand. But in Australia, a big market for annual clovers. And what we found as we've been growing the Australian business is that we need to have a product range that's not just the product range of the climatic zones that you've got in New Zealand. We need to have a product range for the climatic zones that you have in Australia. And so the bit that we've got missing in our portfolio is annual legumes. What's actually happening over there is you're actually starting to see the same sort of thing that's happening in lots of parts of the world where the government's getting out of plant breeding. And there's an opportunity for us to pick up from the Western Australian Department of Agriculture a plant breeding program for annual clovers, which we've just about worked our way through.
I think we have another question from the same gentleman, and then one up the front here, Joe.
One of the other questions with regard to the report was the sale of a time capsule provided by Agritrade. It's been specifically mentioned as having a very strong result. How closely is PGW associated? Is it their own product?
And yes, it is. Yes, so this is a bolus, a zinc bolus for the prevention of facial eczema. We manufacture that product from a factory in Hamilton. It's a product that we've had in our range for a long time, and as many will appreciate, last year was a very bad facial eczema area in a number of locations. So, you know, this is a very good product, very important part of our range, and yes, it's our brand and our technology.
Well, my final question to the meeting is the NZSA asked me to congratulate the board and the management team. They consider that the PGW performed very well this year, and as a personal shareholder as myself, I've certainly, for the same reason, I've noted very significant rises in the share price and very good dividends. So we offer our congratulations to the board and the management team, very ably led by the board. But one of the questions that has arisen with regard to that, and with particular from Agria and Mr. Lai, has the board made any specific succession plans should disaster occur and you know one or two of the board are sort of hurt or damaged or dare we say it, sort of killed in a plane accident? Is there any succession plans we in place to?
Perhaps I can try and answer that. In terms of formal and a documented succession plan, no. But in terms of, you know, if you take our independent directors, arguably quite easily replaceable, some of these chaps, but no, we believe we'd find independent directors without a problem. In terms of the shareholder representative directors, if I take Agria's case, you know, there's capability in Agria. If I take Naitahu's case, we've got a lot of capable directors that we could easily put in to help govern PGW if required. But I don't think any of the board see any departures or any unplanned departures anyway. So hopefully that won't be required.
Okay, thank you. Did we have a...
Bruce Speedy is my name. A couple of years ago, or 3 years ago, I asked the board if they had a policy regarding the extent that would be invested offshore, and there wasn't one. And so I guess at the risk of being a party pooper, I'm concerned at the amount of money that is going into South America. There's 30 million more gone in. That's added 30 million to the term debt, and taken the company's hard assets in South America to 30% of the total. I believe that's becoming a concerning risk. I know the streets of Montevideo are supposed to be paved with gold, but 1 year it's a drought, then it's floods. The history there is bad, and I just ask the directors to be concerned, have a concern about, look at giving us some assurance as to just how far the company's prepared to go in investing in South America.
Want me to take that, or would you? So, so you're right. We have invested more in South America in the last 2 years than we have invested in other aspects of our strategy. Yeah, we have a business in South America that we've been operating for 15 to 20 years now. You know, we started at a couple of million dollars of turnover, and that business is now a $120 million turnover business. Plus, we have bought 50% of our largest retail distribution partner there. So, we've now got a significant operating company there. We would be the largest business of our type in the country. We're comfortable with the risk in terms of Uruguay. I mean, you will be well aware of our company's historical farm systems investment, which really wasn't a success. We have no intention of investing in farming again. You know, the investments we are making are in our seed business, in a retail distribution channel. So they're in areas that are very close to our expertise. We had got to a point in Uruguay where the infrastructure that we had just simply didn't allow us to continue to run the business. So we had to make quite a big step change in the operating infrastructure that we have. Normally we would have a developer build that and then we would lease it back, but in Uruguay there were significant tax credits available to be the building developer. In return we have to hold that building for 10 years to get those tax credits. So we'll do that. You know, maybe at the end of that period we will go back to a more traditional approach. In terms of your question about putting more capital into Uruguay, I said in my report that we see that we are at the end of our investment phase, and now our focus is on delivering the returns from the investments we've made. So, you know, there isn't an appetite in the business today under our current capital structure to go and invest significantly more in Uruguay or South America. We're not an investor really beyond Uruguay. So, you know, and we've got good reporting systems, but you're right. You know, the climate in Uruguay has proven to be more volatile than we had expected that it would be. So that's a management answer, if you like. And I don't know whether Trevor or Ellen, you'd like to add anything from a board perspective.
No, I think that's a good answer, Mark. And I think when we look at our risk profile, yes, we are conscious of the level of investment that we've got in Uruguay. But if we look at the rationale for a Uruguay investment, it does give us diversification of exposure to climatic events. We have Australian exposure, which is multiple in terms of the different climatic conditions there. We've got north and south of New Zealand and now Uruguay. So a flood or a drought in any one of those markets is less of a shock to us than what it would be if we were just concentrated as a New Zealand business. And I think Mark's right. The board is conscious that we've got significant capital invested into Uruguay, and we're challenging management to deliver on that over the next couple of years. So I can't see much more capital going in, Mark, until we've really delivered on what we've put in there, a brand new logistics facility and a recent acquisition that we've made. Both need to be bedded down before we go much further.
Okay, any other questions? Down the...
Hello.
Oh. Hello.
My name's Ming, and I'm the Mayor of Gisborne as well as a shareholder. But I just want to acknowledge Alan, Mark, your board, for supporting our district in terms of the new grain facility. It's good to see PGU Wrightson's investing in the provincial areas, and your company is much appreciated, definitely in our district anyway. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that comment. If there are no other questions, then we have one. Linda or Joe?
Shareholder and farmer, does your cornerstone shareholder result, has it resulted in more export to China, or will it? What are your expectations in the long term?
Yep. So, we do a lot of different business in China and out of China. We sell wool into China. We've exported cattle into China. We procure product in China and other parts of Asia that we bring back into New Zealand and then sell through our retail operations. So, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, China is a really important market for us, but it is by no means, you know, our biggest market. But it's an important market because China has a major impact on world trade, and it's a huge market. Now, we are working with Agria in terms of a series of trials to try and work out which of our seed cultivars, either our own or seeds that we can get access to through our partners, which of them, you know, can be commercialised successfully in China. You know, as you'd appreciate, the climatic conditions in China are very different than New Zealand, Australia, and South America. You know, the product that is grown there is very different. Doesn't always, you know, fit with the product strengths of our company. So the first thing we have to do is work out which of our products can be successfully commercialised. And that's, you know, that's not a short-term piece of work, but it's a piece of work that is underway at the moment between John McKenzie's team and our Agria partners. And if we can find some cultivars that have, you know, market opportunities in China, then Agria have a Chinese seed company. You know, that would be a logical company for us to work with, you know, to look at how we commercialise product into the market. So, you know, it's a live project. We're working through it carefully, and you know, I hope that some good opportunities come out of it. But it's one part of, you know, a multifaceted, you know, set of relationships we have with parties inside China. Okay. I sense that we've... Oh, I know. We've still got questions. That's great.
What is your plan for bringing female directors and executive into your business?
So do you want to handle the director piece?
Sorry, I think the question was, what are we doing about bringing female directors on? Was that right? Sorry, I couldn't quite
hear.
Yes,
it was.
Okay, good. Look, I would take no formal plan around gender diversity as such, but we have a formal approach to diversity in general. You know, diversity is a really interesting thing for a board. Our challenge is we want diversity in thinking and contribution. That may or may not come from a different gender. It may or may not come from a different culture. We have multiple cultures represented around our board. We just don't happen to have any female. I'm sure if there was a vacancy for a board member, we would look actively at filling that diversity piece around gender. I think we would all agree we see it more important that you're represented by people who are different in their thinking and are prepared to challenge. I admit that much of that does come from gender diversity, but I think it's more about thought diversity that we tend to concentrate on. So I hope that answers it for you.
And in terms of our staff, you know, it's very mixed. That one member of our exec team is a female, but we have many senior females working through the business, and yeah, an increasing number of new hires in technical and in customer sales facing areas, and you know, through the business are female. So there's no gender bias in terms of, you know, the staff side of things. Okay, look, thank you for those questions. We'll have an opportunity over morning tea to have any other discussions you wish. So just before moving on, I'd just like again to take the opportunity on behalf of the management team to thank all staff of PGW and our customers for what was a really great great year. So thank you all very much. So now I'll pass to Bruce Irvine, who is the chair of our audit committee, to work through the resolutions. So Bruce.
Thanks. Thank you, Mark. I'm going to run this bit of the meeting from my seat, because I am going to ask a couple of the directors who are up for re-election to stand up and say some things, and we'll have them up at the podium. So the formal business of the meeting is, as per the outline in the notice of meeting, there are three pieces of business. Two involve the re-election of directors, and the third one is the authorising the board to set the remuneration of the auditors. Similar to recent years, we've again offered shareholders the option to cast their vote by post or online, or for the people present here in person, and that option provides shareholders who aren't able to make it with more flexibility and convenience when they can't attend the meeting here. So given that you can cast your votes online or through by post, a consequence of that is that all resolutions will be determined by way of a poll today. So as we go through the business of the meeting, those in attendance that haven't cast their vote, I'll ask you to record your votes, and we will collect those at the end of formal business. And we'll collate those with those that have come in through the post or online, and at the end of the meeting, Probably after we've had a cup of tea, we'll put the results up on the overhead. So I'd now ask you to consider the formality of the business. And so I thought I would start, given the ease of replacement, John, with you as the independent director. So John Nicol, John is a current director of PG Wrightson's and is a member of the Audit Committee, and a very useful member of the Audit Committee. He is appointed to the board on the 22nd of October 2013. He retires by rotation and, in accordance with the company's constitution, offers himself for re-election. Now, the board has determined that John is an independent director as defined by the NZX listing rules. The company's board recommends shareholders vote in favour of John's re-election. So I'll now ask John to say a few words.
Thank you, Bruce. Bit of a surprise in the order there, I notice. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I feel fortunate to be before you today seeking re-election as a director of PGW. Over the last 35 years, I've had experience as a chief executive and director in many of New Zealand's primary industries. And that has equipped me well to understand and contribute to the PGW business as it is today. I make an effort to get out and about and engage with our greatest asset, our people. I'm often humbled by their knowledge, pride, and passion they show towards the PGW business, and I enjoy engaging with them and encouraging them. I seek your support in re-election to the board, and in the event that I am successful, that will give me the opportunity to not only participate closely in this wonderful business, but also to have access to the best advice in growing avocados. Thank you.
Are there any questions of John before you sit down?
Don't run away.
Are there any questions for John? Okay. In that case, I will put the motion that John Nicol be re-elected as a director of PG Wrightson's. Is there any discussion on that motion? Thank you. So if you could just record your votes, if you haven't done so, and we'll pick those up at the end of the meeting. I would now like to ask, thanks John, I'd like to ask Trevor Burt to stand and say a few things. Trevor is a current director of PG Wrightson's, and he joined the board on the 11th of December 2012. He was appointed as deputy chairman in August 2014. He retires by rotation and, in accordance with the company's constitution and being eligible, offers himself for re-election. Trevor is an associated person of the substantial security holder Ngāi Tahu Capital Limited. The board has determined that he does not qualify as an independent director as defined by the NZX listing rules. The company's board recommends shareholders vote in favour of Trevor's re-election, and Trevor's bio, as was John's, is up there on the screen behind you. So I'll now ask Trevor to say a few words. Thank you.
No, I don't need that. My wife told me I don't need a microphone, do I?
I'm sorry, the reverberation, I was struggling. And I constantly, but
So I will now put the motion that Trevor Burt be re-elected a director of PGG Wrightsons. Are there any questions at this stage of Trevor? Okay, so again, if you could just fill out your voting papers. The last piece of formal business is the auditor's remuneration. I note that the auditors are automatically reappointed as the company's auditors under Section 200 of the Companies Act 1993. The proposed resolution is to authorise the board to set the auditor's remuneration. This is usual with audit fees. Due to the complexity of the business, the changing nature of the business, it's too difficult to set the fees at the beginning of the year, so we'd like to set them during the course of the year as we find out what work is required by our auditors. So I will move the motion that the board be authorised to set the auditor's remuneration for the ensuing year. Is there any discussion about that resolution? Okay. In that case, can you just again complete your forms? So that's the end of the formal business in terms of the three resolutions that we have. If you could now complete your forms, we'll pick those up in a minute after I close the meeting. But I'm now up to general business, and you'll see again on the notice of annual meeting, item five is to consider any other business that may be properly brought before the annual meeting. So I'm now opening the floor for any questions from shareholders on any other matters that they wish to raise. Okay, I can't see anyone, Joe, no? Righto, thank you. In that case, I would like to call the meeting to a close. The scrutineers will take your forms. What sort of a process, have you got some boxes or what are you doing? Yep. So the scrutineers will be coming down with the boxes, and I would like to formally close the meeting. I'd like to thank you all for your attendance, and I would like to ask you to join both the board and management for a cup of tea and some light refreshments through in the next room. So thank you very much, and we'll see you again, hopefully next year or the year after when we're up in this way again. Thank you.